The Pre-K through 12 Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Adrian, will you please call the roll?
Chair Fine.
Here.
Vice Chair Bell.
Here.
Representative Lupus.
Here.
Andrade.
Here.
Bartleman.
Here.
Bush.
Here.
Fetterhoff.
Here.
Haig.
Here.
McLean.
Here.
Roach.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Shrunau.
Here.
Valdez.
Present.
Ranking Member Wilhite.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Quorum, sir.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, because when one meeting in a week is not enough, we will have two. Please make sure all of your electronic devices are turned off or are on vibrate. Members, we only have an hour today, but we do have a fairly short agenda. We have a consent agenda, which includes 12 appropriation project bills, and then we will move on to our two general bills, HB 5 and HB 51. So let's get the consent agenda out of the way. Let's take up the consent agenda. Remember, members, we vote once on the agenda in its entirety. The public is welcome to testify on any of the bills listed on the consent agenda. We will not take up question, debate, and vote on each of the bills individually. Instead, we will be in questions and debate only once. Remember, you may vote no on any particular bill by submitting a nay vote consent agenda form with the administrative assistant before the vote. Members, in your packet, there's a list of the appropriations project bills. With that said, are there any questions? Okay, seeing none, there is no one wishing to provide public testimony. We have received no appearance cards. Is there debate on the consent agenda? Okay. Seeing none, before I call the vote on the consent agenda, Adrian, are there any nay vote forms?
No, sir.
There are not. Adrian, will you please call the roll on the consent agenda? Remember, members, a yes vote signifies an affirmative vote for every bill on the consent agenda.
Chair Fine?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bell?
Yes.
Representative Lupus?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Shrunau?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Wilhite?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
15 yeas, sir.
All right, members, by your vote, all of the consent bills on the agenda will be reported favorably. Okay. All right, next we are going to take up HB 51, Charter Schools, by Representative McLean. Representative McLean, you are recognized to present your bill. Can't hear you. You may have to tilt the mic up too. No? Try now. That should be it.
How about that?
Yep, we're good.
Thank you. The button's in the back. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's my pleasure to be able to be here and present HB 51. Members, as most of you know, a lot of you are on other education committees with us, and under the leadership of Speaker Sprouls, there's a lot of discussion taking place to ensure that education and workforce should go hand in hand, to ensure that all of the citizens of Florida can procure a great job and create economic security for themselves and their families, to address the needs of educational capacity, workforce qualifications, and career education opportunities that may extend beyond a school district's boundaries. HB 51 will allow for state universities and Florida college system institutions to solicit applications and sponsor charter schools upon approval by the Department of Education. Provides that a state university's sponsored charter school may serve students from multiple school districts to meet regional education or workforce demands. Provides that students attending a state university or FCS institution sponsored charter school are not included in the school district's grade calculation. It provides several different accountability measures requiring Department of Education in collaboration with charter school sponsors and operators to develop a sponsor evaluation framework and report results in its annual charter school application report. Revises charter school application reporting requirements and submission dates for both sponsors and the DOE. And it authorizes charter schools to provide career and professional academies and revises charter school enrollment limitations. And that is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for that presentation. There are no amendments on the bill. Are there any questions for Representative McLean? Yes, Vice Chair Bell, you're recognized with a question.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative McLean, for bringing this great bill forward. Just one question. In Polk County, we have a collegiate high school that is operated by Polk State College under the president of the Polk County School Board. Will this affect that college at all, or will they continue on? And to add to that, I mean, can, say, for instance, Polk State or University, say, Poly, could they set up a charter school in another city throughout the state?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the answer to the first question is no, nothing would change with currently. And the second would be, so I think this is more set up around regional, so it'd be in their region that they serve. So each college or university has a region that they serve in. So no, they wouldn't just be out willy-nilly setting up charter schools. It has to be within their region that it serves.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, follow-up? You good? Okay, are there any additional questions? Representative Bartleman, you're recognized for a question.
Right now, colleges have the ability to, Chair, thank you, sir. Right now, colleges have the responsibility, have the ability to create charter schools, charter school just like this, but they would have to go through the school district as the, you know, LEA. Why do you think this is necessary, and why do you need to change the process to do this?
You're recognized.
Chairman, thank you. Thank you for that question, Representative. So this, again, this is going to be a regional approach. Currently, that's not something that's allowed because they would have to go through the local school board. So in this case, in my case, in College of Central Florida, their region covers three counties, which is Marion, Citrus, and Levy. And so you could have students coming from in any of those three counties. And so without having to go to the approval process of all three of the school boards, this would allow for the university or college to set up the charter school.
Follow up to that?
Yep, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Don't they have the ability to do that now? They could go to a school outside to the charter school from the other county, because students from Broward County, many of them attend a charter school sponsored by FAU in Palm Beach County, and that school is regulated by the Palm Beach County School Board. So this bill wouldn't stop students from having the ability to cross a district to go to the charter school. So I'm just curious as to what else this accomplishes.
Chairman, thank
you. You're recognized.
Thank you. I think, again, so as we look at, if we go back also to think about from a workforce development perspective, most of our state colleges are our workforce educational institutions within my county and within my district. We have, I have one state college there, and then the nearest university would be University of Florida. And so this would allow for them to meet the needs of our educational workforce. I think that currently it's a little more difficult to do when you're having to try to do it either through the school board or as part of a region where you've got three different counties being served in a region. So I think this would help free up the state colleges and universities to be able to provide that needed institution.
Okay. Chair, one additional question.
You're recognized.
Thank you, sir. What about, have you thought about the unintended consequence of what's going to happen with the FTE and having that college to be able to capture the highest FTE from all of the school boards? And in addition to that, you're basically making the college the LEA. So when you talk about kids' ESE services, limited English proficient services, the evaluation and testing of students, the school board is actually the natural fit, and many charters actually have contracts with school districts to do those services. So I'm just concerned about why you're taking it away from the school district as the elected body that has, you know, that has to be accountable to the public. So all three of those, I'm sorry, and then I'm done.
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try to, so the charter school under the college, you know, a Florida college or a university would have the same requirements have to be met as any other charter school. We're removing none of the requirements of the current charter school laws and statutes that are currently in place to be governed by. So I think, you know, just real quick, go ahead and hit on the point of, I know in my district where, you know, again, we have one state college, and the board of directors are made up of appointed members from my community, or at least from one of the three counties within that region. And so, you know, so from a local control perspective, I think you have members sitting on that board who are local, you know, members of the local community. And so none of the requirements, none of the, none of the requirements are, you know, are waived in this situation. Everything, every charter school would still be governed under the rules that currently exist.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Valdez, you're recognized with a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Rep. McClain, thank you very much for bringing this bill forward. My question to you is, and it was just a process of just now listening to the questioning, how would the university be able to provide services such as ESC services or provide just those kinds of general services that normally are provided through the school district that the charter schools also, you know, work in collaboration? How would those students be served?
You're recognized.
Chairman, thank you. Thank you, Representative Valdez. You know, I think, again, the requirements of the charter school would be the same as that currently exist in law. So if it's ESE or whatever it might be, they would still have to meet all those requirements. I think one of the things that this bill is, you know, one of the things, and things have evolved a little bit since I ran this bill last year, right? Because now we've got employment and education tied together. And this originally was about trying to create an educational pipeline for employment. And so to me, it's probably even bigger this year than it was last year when I was working on it, but just because of how we've tied education workforce. And our state colleges have done a very good job of providing workforce opportunities, workforce educational opportunities. So they would continue to do that. I think that's where your board of directors, certainly your board of trustees of your colleges or university, that's certainly something they're going to have to take into account. In other words, if we're going to do this, here's all the requirements that we have, and we're going to have to meet those. And so I think it would be left to a board of trustees to make those determinations.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Ranking Member Wilhite, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Chairman, I'm sorry. You sent me a message on, I thought, one bill, but it was this one, and I'm sorry that it did not come. The one this morning I was fine with, and I didn't realize it was this one. So if I could ask you just a couple of questions, if you
don't
mind.
If you're on this committee and another one I'm going to present in this afternoon, then I sent you two texts yesterday.
Yeah, no, it was the one this morning.
Okay.
Chairman, with your indulgence, I just have a couple questions. I'm a little concerned about right now our local school boards provide school resource officers and security to our charter schools. Would this create another police force now because they're going to go into the college system to have school resource officers at these charter schools now?
Chairman.
Yes, you're recognized.
Thank you. No, you know, currently most universities and colleges have their own security already.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
So I'm guessing that they would just increase their security or police force, not create a new one, but they would extend it down to the charter schools that they create then.
You're recognized?
Yes.
Okay. And then another follow-up, Chair.
You're recognized.
I guess I get a little bit concerned about the aspect of this bill where I have the ability to go to my local school board meetings, or I have the ability to vote for my school board members, and they then are charged with the responsibilities of overseeing the schools and the charter schools, and they're accountable to the voters, just like we are. I don't see that board of trustees are accountable to voters. They're accountable to governors or the president of the colleges. And not even to the board of the president of the college, I don't believe. So it makes me concerned that now we're going to start taking or putting more schools under an unelected body that are making decisions for students' education and not having any accountability to voters in that county that are paying taxes.
You're recognized.
Chairman, thank you. Not to be contentious, but currently universities and colleges are run by boards of trustees, and they've certainly, you know, I think we certainly could say that there are award-winning colleges and universities in the state of Florida currently. Certainly, if You know, one thing to remember is charter schools would be paid strictly out of state funds, so that would be a responsibility of DOE. That's why DOE is going to be involved in this conversation. The approval would be through DOE, and so I think you're going to have that oversight. Again, your board of trustees are normally local folks. If you've ever been to a state college, when they have a board meeting, public testimony is allowed. Now, we had a little issue back a couple years ago at our local state at our local college, and there was a lot of contentious testimony around that, and they gave, you know, everyone plenty of time, and then the board of trustees, you know, had to take all that information in and then make a decision about it. So I think the board, again, going back to the board of trustees, I think that they're, you know, they're local folks who have to apply, and they're going to be from one of those three counties, and certainly they're going to know, pretty much like we do, they're going to know people in the community who would know that they're on a board, and they would come to them and if they had an issue with the charter school.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And last follow-up.
You're recognized.
Is there a process involved in this? And I saw there was a process for application to create a charter school by that university. Do you foresee a process where current charter schools are going to petition to college or universities and be merged into their system? And if so, will there be any kind of geographical area they should be close proximity to, or will a charter school in Miami-Dade be associated with Florida State and have that geographical distance and still oversee their daily operations? And that's it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
You're recognized.
So to the first question, I'm going to say no. To the second part of it, I would say that, again, this is what we're really trying to focus on by allowing this, is to allow the state colleges or a university to help us, you know, create workforce development opportunities and those kinds of things. I don't anticipate that a state college would, you know, again, we're talking about a regional approach. We're telling within their region, they could set up a charter school. So in my particular case, it's three counties. So they could set it up in one of those three counties.
Okay. Representative Bartleman for a second bite at the apple.
When you look at your bill, it talks about them being the sponsor to approve and deny standalone charter schools that may or may not be affiliated with your workforce effort. That's what a sponsor does. So I don't know how you're going to limit it. It's actually just creating, they're just going to be a new hub for charter school applications without any affiliation to the district. Is that your goal? Because your answer last time didn't reflect that. I could set up a charter school that has nothing to do with your workforce goals, and I'm going to appeal to you as opposed to the local school board. Is that, that's what this is?
You're recognized.
Chairman, thank you. That possibility may exist. Again, I think currently, if you look at House Bill 1507 that Representative Yarbrough is running, he made some amendments to that, which lays out a much more stringent process for workforce development by all of our state colleges, and so most of our state colleges are focused on workforce development, and so I don't see them wanting just to run a charter. I don't anticipate that they would just want to run a charter school to run a charter school, unless it helps meet the vision that they have for what they want to do as a university. And again, that's going to be set by the board of trustees somewhat. So I don't see if they were to come in and say, hey, we just want to start a charter elementary school. I just don't know if that's really what they would be focused on.
Okay. Any other questions? Did you have a question, Representative Bush? I couldn't tell before. No? Okay. Do you? Do you have a question? I thought I saw your hand before. Representative Bush, did you have a question?
Oh, okay. Thank you, Ms.
Yep, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just ask this, because when you talk about charter school, it's so controversial. It's like the boogerman has shown up when you mention charter schools. It's like you're anti-public education. So, and then it's the difference between they are not accountable like the public schools. So I want to ask you just one question about accountability. I look in your summary analysis, and in the summary analysis, it says, speaking on accountability, moving it from the school board to the college and board and universities, here's what it says about accountability. Provides accountability for all charter school operators by requiring the DEO, Department of Education, in collaboration with its annual charter school application report. I want you to touch on that. Also, is it not that what type of accountability measure that you have put in to make sure that there's accountability if it's moved to the college board as well as the university, and who they, I know they report to the Department of Education. Is it a mechanism in place to give the public an assurance that there's accountability that is put in place? And with that, I know you said the current law requires that they have to follow the statutes, et cetera, but I want to just hear, just for the record, I want to hear it coming from you, Mr. Sponsor.
Thank
You're
you.
You're recognized.
For, no, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So again, I think part of that too, part of the rest of that is that, so DOE is going to, so as we, when we do this, it is, it certainly creates a little, it creates a little bit of a different framework for how this, how they would be sponsored and authorized. So we're directing DOE to say, hey, because we're doing this, you all are going to have to, in collaboration with the sponsors and the operators and some of those kinds of things, you're going to have some, we're going to have a little more discussion about it. But at the end of the day, DOE is going to be the who actually approves. So in other words, you'd still do an applicant, you're still going to do the same application, whether it was a K-12, whether it's a, you know, a 6th through 12th grade, or a kindergarten through 6th grade, or 8th grade, whatever it might be. The process is still going to be, the application has to be made, the sponsor has to go to DOE, here's the application, DOE is still going to look at it, they're going to make sure that they're gonna, that they're meeting all the requirements of current statute, you know, current law. And so, and again, I think, and I hate to keep harping on it, but you have a local group of people who are sitting as the Board of Trustees at your state colleges. And they're local people who certainly should have a, they're gonna be concerned about the mission of the college, and the university is run by, you know, their Board of Trustees as well. And again, I think if we look at our state college system, our university system, it's an award-winning system. And so we have to believe that they're going to continue to meet the mission of higher education.
Okay. Are there, yes, follow-up. Quick follow-up.
Oh, well, quick, okay.
We have one more bill we got to get through.
Okay, quick follow-up then. You said it's going to be done by regions, and there's three regions, three counties or three cities or three regions?
You recognize.
Chairman. No, for me personally, Rep. When in my district, I have one state college. They represent three. Their region is three counties each. I didn't look through all of it, but I'm quite sure that some may be five counties, some may be six counties. Yeah, I'm not sure what the numbers would be, but whatever region they, whatever is their current region, that's where they could, that's where they would draw their students from for the charter school.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, seeing none, I have two quick ones since we were talking about accountability. First question, is any child ever compelled by their parents to attend a charter school, no matter what kind, as contemplated by your bill or any other charter school?
Mr. Chairman.
You're recognizing my question.
I'm being smart. Not to my knowledge.
Okay, so therefore, thank you. So therefore, given that no child is forced to go to a charter school, it's only the decision of a parent to send their child to said charter school, wouldn't the ultimate form of accountability for a charter school be if parents don't like it, they won't send their kids there and the school will close? You're recognized.
Thank you, Ms. J. That has been the case in the past on charter schools, yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, with that, we are gonna turn to public appearance cards. I think we do have a couple here, hold on. All right, I have two electronic appearance cards. Christian Kamara from the Florida Charter School Alliance waves in support. James Mosteller from the Foundation for Florida's Future waves in support. And we do have one in-person appearance card, Diego Echeverry, if I got your name wrong, I apologize, with Americans for Prosperity, speaking as a proponent. And you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Chair. I especially want to thank you for pronouncing my name correctly.
All right.
I hear all kinds. I got called a charcuterie last week.
It gets mispronounced all the time.
It was phenomenal. Thank you. I'm very appreciative of that, sir. Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee for the opportunity to speak to you today. And thank you, Representative McLean, for bringing forth this important bill advocating for educational freedom. My name is Diego Echeverry, representing 160,000 activists across the state here to talk to you in support of HB 51. HB 51 seeks to expand educational freedom throughout the state by allowing for the state universities and Florida college system institutions to accept applications for charter schools. Allowing for these schools to expand would mean the chance for a greater educational options for even more students, something which all Floridians should be able to agree on. Educational freedom is important because every child is unique in the way they learn and grow. Greater educational freedom means more options to nurture our children and ensure they are put on the path to success. With offering new chances at learning, with new ways to reach students and engage parents, HB 51 continues Florida's proud tradition of advancing educational freedom. Members of the committee, Americans for Prosperity, and our activists believe strongly in expanding educational freedom for all children, and HB 1 helps move us along that path. Thank you very much, and we ask for your favorable support.
All right, seeing no additional public testimony, members, is there any debate on this bill? Yes, Representative Bartleman, you're recognized in debate.
Yes, I just want to be clear that charter schools, I'm very cognizant of the fact that charter schools play by the same rules as all public schools in the state of Florida, including having to have licensed and degree teachers, follow FTE rules, and curriculum and FSA mandates. So it has nothing to do with not liking charter schools because we have some great charter schools out there. My issue here is it's creating an unintended consequence for me of this bill is you said you don't think that universities are going to go ahead and just sponsor a whole bunch of different charter schools, thus creating university school districts. Could potentially happen under this bill. If they chose to do so, they could decide to take, all charters can run their sponsorship through the university school system. And I don't really think, I think there are huge unintended consequences. If you think about the audits, the support that's needed. And so for me, I love the idea of the workforce. And I love the idea of having, especially for smaller counties, to have like the regional approach. I mean, we have the largest technical college in southeastern United States. So for my area, we benefit, you know, from that technical college system we have. You all do not have that. So this definitely helps. But it's that opening the door that gives me apprehension on this bill, because it's just there's just so many different things that could happen. And I think if the language, and I'm sorry, I had so many texts, I did not see your text. Actually, I was just looking, I'm going, how come we didn't talk about this before? And I am up on your other bill too, I like that one. So the point is that I just think there are unintended consequences here that haven't been thought through, and it could have been done where it would just be a regional workforce charters totally affiliated with their system where the schools approved would have to align with whatever that workforce is. But under this bill, anything can be opened under this sponsorship. So I appreciate this. I know what you're doing for your community. So thank you.
Okay. Is anyone else wishing to speak in debate? Representative Andrada, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Chair McClain, for bringing this bill. A lot of times when we're discussing charter schools, the complaint is about accountability. There's nothing more accountable than a parent who's voting with their feet and their children's education. I think Chair Fine made that point very clearly in questions, but it's true. No one's forced to go to these schools. They're either high-performing schools that parents are making the decision to send their kids to because they believe it's going to result in a better future for them. Or they're not, and they're going to choose to send them to a public school in their district. Providing these opportunities for parents, empowers kids, and I'm excited to see the result of the effect of this statute once it becomes operating and helping us prepare our workforce for the jobs of tomorrow. Thank you.
Any other members wishing to speak in debate? Okay, seeing none, just a couple quick comments before you close. Look, I believe competition is good, and I think that's one of the fundamental success stories behind Florida education. And right now, we don't have competition in the creation of charter schools. It's done only by school boards. I often think about, with your bill, I have a university in my district. It's not public. It could be someday. That's Florida Institute of Technology. And they have the Scott Center for Autism, which they spend a ton of money and have a massive amount of resources. And I've often thought, boy, what if they could have a charter school and leverage the resources they have with the Scott Center. You talk about children with special needs. how might that be able to help our children if they had that opportunity? One thing I want to disagree with that Representative Bartleman said is she said charter schools play by the same rules as other public schools. They do not. They do not in one fundamental way. Bad public schools never close. Bad charter schools do. They're far more accountable than our traditional government-run public schools. And then the last thing I would add on this, there's a discussion that we are going to allow unelected bodies to make these decisions under your bill. Well, unfortunately, as I'm learning in my own school district in my county, unelected people are the ones who make the decisions. Last night at my school board meeting, unelected bureaucrats decided that it was the responsibility of the school district to raise our children, not the responsibility of parents, something I intend to fix this legislative session. So I like the idea that we're not going to elect these unelected bureaucrats at our school boards make these kinds of decisions. We're going to have more competition as well. And with that, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And with your remarks, I'll close.
All right. Thank you. Well, seeing that, having closed, Representative McClain having closed on his bill, Adrian, will you please call the roll?
Chair Fine?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bell?
Yes.
Representative Alupis?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bartleman?
No.
Bush?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Hague?
Yes.
McClain?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Trunow?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Willight?
No.
Williams?
No.
12 yeas, 3 nays.
All right. By your vote, with 12 yeas, 3 nays, members, your vote on HB 51 will be shown favor, will be reported favorably. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you,
Mayor. All right. We've got one other bill to hear today. And we'll bring him on up. Thanks for coming over. This is HB 5, Civic Education Curriculum by Representative Zika. Representative Zika, you are recognized to present your bill.
Good afternoon, Chair Fine and Vice Chair Bell, Ranking Member Willhite, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to present House Bill 5, Portraits in Patriotism Act. Also, I want to take this opportunity to thank members for speaking with me on the phone and in person about this important legislation. I was moved hearing your life stories of how you overcame adversity and realized the American dream. Members, on November 17th of last year, in the Florida House Chamber, Speaker Sprouse shared with us his beautiful vision that he would love for every school-aged child to hear from Floridians, Americans, who hail from countries where freedom is a luxury and liberty a dream, to tell their story of why, of all the nations in the world, they would choose United States of America as their home. This is why, members, I have introduced House Bill 5, Portraits in Patriotism Act, to share our American stories with the next generation of Floridians. The subject proposed legislation enhances integrated civics education in our state. It directs the Florida Department of Education to build a Portraits in Patriotism video library of personal stories of diverse individuals who demonstrate civic-minded qualities to be used as part of a civic education curriculum in our state. Furthermore, it ensures high-quality, consistent coursework across the state by developing and approving an integrated K-12 education curriculum, civic education curriculum by our Department of Education. More importantly, the curriculum will help students develop a sense of civic pride, an understanding of our founding principles, the importance of defending liberty, and effective public advocacy skills. The high school U.S. government course requires a comparative discussion of political ideologies such as communism that conflict with American democracy. Members, through the Portraits in Patriotism Act, we'll make it possible to tell our American stories to our children in our schools. America is a place of big dreams and unique achievements, where your place of beginning does not determine your place of becoming. As I have filed this subject legislation, I had the opportunity to meet with each one of you. And as I mentioned earlier, I was moved by your life stories. Just yesterday, I heard of a story of a teenager in Florida having an experience with law enforcement, facing wrongful imprisonment at the age of 14, a traumatizing experience, overcoming adversity. It did not let her define her experience, finished high school, went to college, got two master's degrees, became a foster parent, was involved in public service, served 8 years in the city commission, and today she serves with us in the Florida House of Representatives, our colleague, Representative Williams. Stories, there are so many stories all over the state. At the age of 14, a member of our Florida House, Representative Bush, first African-American, overcoming so much adversity, being one of several children in their home, becoming the first African-American to get elected to any statewide office, for being the first one out of Panama City, only in America. The son of a plumber and a front desk receptionist coming from a limited economic means. Will you wonder what the future has in store for this young man? Then would he finish high school, join the Coast Guard, and while he was in the Coast Guard, would finish the college, go to law school, and one day he would get elected to the Florida House of Representatives, our colleague, Representative Roach. The reason I tell those stories, members, is because it's America's stories, it's our stories. And that's the reason this bill will provide us an opportunity to tell our American stories to the next generation of Floridians. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. That was a great opening. There are no amendments. Are there any questions for Representative Zika? Yes, Representative Bush, you're recognized with a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep, could you clear up whether or not this is a civic bill or a history bill? That was a issue that when you presented this in our first, in the first committee. So I think that if you can do a little bit job on that, whether or not differentiate between whether this is a civic bill or a history bill, I think it would give justice to the bill.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Bush. Just like in our first committee, this is purely a civics bill. This is not a history bill.
You recognize, you have a follow-up?
Well, could you address whether or not it's a bill that specifically zero in or put specificity on comparative government ideologies, or whether or not it's a communist bill? I think that that is a part of this bill that you really need to make it clear to this, not only to this committee, but those who are looking forward to support your bill.
You recognized?
Thank you, Chair. The subject legislation, it is a civics bill. And furthermore, in the legislation, you get 3 credits in social studies, 1 credit in U.S. history, 1 credit in world history, 0.5 credit in economics, 0.5 credit in U.S. government. And the U.S. government course, we are incorporating comparative discussion of political ideologies such as communism. So this legislation is purely a civics legislation with a component infused in the U.S. government course to ensure that we teach political ideologies that conflict with our founding principles, with America's democracy. Thank you, Representative Bush.
Okay. Are there any, yes, Representative Valdez, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Zika, we've had in-depth conversations about this. Can you hear me now? Okay. We've had in-depth conversations about this particular bill. And if the bill is intended to talk about political ideologies, why is it that on line 27 and 28, we are specifically talking about 2 systems or ideologies, communism and totalitarianism? Why single those out only and not talk about anarchism and label all of these other ideologies?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Fine, and thank you, Representative, for the question. The proposed legislation in the U.S. government core specifically, which must include a comparative discussion of political ideologies, comma, such as communism and totalitarianism, the conflict with the principles of freedom and democracy essential to the founding principles of the United States, the component comparative discussion of political ideologies that conflict with American democracy, you can add as many as you want to in that education, because anything that conflicts with who we are as Americans must be taught, because it's un-American if it's an ideology conflict of who we are. So thank you.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you. To your point, if we were to remove the comma and remove such as communism and totalitarianism, the bill would do the same thing.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Fine. Thank you, Representative. To your point, on the first committee stop, it's important that we teach communism. And here's the reason why. There were 100 million people that have died in 100 years under communism. Currently, in Florida, we teach communism as an economic theory, not as a governing theory. So it's paramount that we teach what this form of governing would do to any society around the world. Furthermore, the two different ideologies in the world today, democracy and totalitarianism. There's a large percentage of the world presently under some form of dictatorship. And we must teach to our children and generations to come that anything that conflicts with American democracy must be taught so we know of who we are as a nation. Thank you, Chair.
And just a quick note, this bill does have one more stop. We are theoretically the fiscal stop. Not that we can't have these discussions and amendments, but the bill does have one more stop in full education. So
yes,
if you sit on that, you'll have one more bite of the apple. You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's a great segue for my other question, which is twofold. Is there, being that this bill is set to begin on July 1st this year, 2021, is there already set curriculum to advance this, and how much will that curriculum cost?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Would you please repeat the question one more time? I missed it.
Sure. Is the curriculum already in place, being that the bill is due to take an effect July 21st, or rather July of 2021? Is there curriculum ready in the hopper to launch this fall? And what is the cost of that curriculum?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. A great question. There is no curriculum prepared this time. And that's a good question. I'll follow up with staff on the date.
Okay, thank you.
Additional questions? Yes, Ranking Member Wilhite, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, and I think to Representative Valdez's point, line 27 and 28, identify a specific one. Lines 63 and 64, I think, do exactly what you want without naming those two specific ones. Because on line 63, governing, and it says, victims of other nations' governing philosophies, who can compare those philosophies with the United States? Those philosophies are totalitarianism, communism, and all those other things. So if you already have it in those two lines, you potentially don't need to specifically name out those only two, which I think people zero in on in the legislation, because it says such as, but it specifically names them. So I think your such as is already over on those other two lines. So I think there's an idea that maybe if you would consider amending this in your next stop to maybe, withdraw those, because I think obviously people have a very strong aversion to communism because we support democracy so much. And I think I've expressed to you that I don't want this legislation or this civics teaching to only include positive things. You and I had that conversation. I wanted to include those negative, those hard, those tough things, those conversations, the adversity you overcame. You had to work a lot.
Representative Zika, you're recognized to answer the question. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Can you please confirm the question one more time?
I'm sorry, Chair.
Yep, we have 15 minutes, so
okay, I think
ask
the point
it
was,
in 10 seconds.
I think the point was, would you consider taking out those two specific ideologies because you already have it in another segment in the bill?
Thank you, Chair. I mean, the proposed legislation, obviously, it's a process that we go through. Presently, under the discussion of political ideologies such as communism and totalitarianism, and after that, on the second page, under 63 and 64 line items, I think those include, because there's more than one form of governing throughout the world, and under the Portraits and Patriotism video library, we're able to give an opportunity to new Americans that have come to America to tell their story. Maybe someone grew up under a kingdom in another part of the world, they want to share their political ideology, their conflicts with American democracy. So that's the reason both pages, in my opinion, both components to the bill are important to leave in there. But I'll be happy to have further dialogue about
this. Thank you. We're going to move on to public testimony. We have one in-person appearance card, Randy Osborne with the Florida Eagle Forum, who's a proponent. I'm going to give you 2 minutes. Unfortunately, we're short on time.
Thank you, Chair, and I really appreciate even taking up this bill. And I will be brief. I didn't even bring my notes in. I have to keep mine. Okay.
You have to leave your mask on.
I apologize for that. Thanks. I will be brief, but I want to let you know this. I interviewed my foundation. We went up to University of Florida, interviewed students, and asked them if they had their choice of what kind of government that they wanted to have, what would it be? And I gave them a choice between communism and Americanism, basically our form of republic, our democratic form of republic. And this is what I got. 7 out of 10 said that they would prefer communism. And then I went on to ask them about Venezuela, if they knew anything about Venezuela. None of them even knew about Venezuela. I was in Venezuela. I was there when Venezuela fell. I saw that, and it was a vote of the people because they did not understand communism. I will tell you right now that every one of those people that voted for communism today in Venezuela would beg for a republic like this United States of America. And it's because we are not teaching our students the difference and the dangers of that. And I would also ask that you not add or take that out of the amendment, totalitarianism and communism. I'd ask that you would not remove that. And also, some of the other philosophies of other governments, I understand you could use those. But communism is one that's being taught in our public schools. It's being taught in our universities. If it wasn't, why did 7 out of 10 of them say that they would prefer communism? Thank you.
Thank you. Members, is there any debate on this bill? Okay. All right. Seeing none. Representative Valdez, you're recognized.
Quickly, on this debate, again, right now, because this is the Appropriations Subcommittee, and we do not know the number of what this is going to cost, I'll be down on this until we get that information. And as a daughter and first American born of Cuban immigrants, I've been impacted by communism. And I understand. So let that be clear. The conversations about communism and things of that's happening, why haven't we talked about what happened in our nation's capital when folks used the American flag to beat cops? Those are the kinds of things that we need to talk about, because you know what? You know how quickly it took for what they call in Spanish, un golpe de Estado. That's what happened in our nation's capital.
Reverend Valdez, please keep your comments to the subject of the bill.
This is subject of the bill. It's talking about civics, and it's talking about communism and totalitarianism as subjects of matter, Mr. Chair, and I respectfully disagree with that. So I love America. This is my home. This is my country. And I am biliterate. I'm proud of my heritage. My parents fled Cuba before the regime took place because they saw it coming. So let's talk about the immigrant the immigration process. Absolutely, we all have different experiences. And to be able to just hone in on two bad ways, because this is an experiment, and our experiment could have been blown up very easily, as we saw. And that's what I'm concerned about, that we only focus on those two and not talk about the other ideologies. Maybe we need to look at the curriculum, and that's something that we don't do. That's something that the Department of State does when it looks upon in their book adoption. That's another place in which we can see how, in these books, we're talking about these different governments. I am by far not a communist.
All right, thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to speak? Representative Bartleman, you're recognized in debate.
Yeah, I would just offer the suggestion that there is an advanced placement comparative government course offered by the College Board that looks at all different kinds of government, and maybe a suggestion to the DOE when they're approving this is that's a curriculum that you don't have to reinvent the wheel, that touches on everything you do. Also, the different types of governments are already in the AP government curriculum, so I guess what you're trying to do is enhance that. So those would just be my suggestions, since these things already exist out there, and you're just trying to, you know, embellish the curriculum that's currently in the high school at the general and honors level. So thank you for this bill.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, seeing none, one quick point. Since we talked about fiscal analysis, the DOE has stated that there will be no fiscal and all impacts can be absorbed with their existing resources. With that, Representative Zika, you're recognized to briefly close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair Fine and members of the committee. In light of time, I'll keep it brief. And I said the same thing at my last closing on the first committee stop. Today, we're going to do the single most American thing. We're going to agree to disagree. Some of you will vote yes, some of you will vote no. Some, maybe all of you will vote yes, maybe all of you will vote no. But then at the end of the day, we're going to celebrate America and what brings us together. Regardless of where we stand on policy, at the end of the day, we agree to disagree, and we're all Americans. This is an important piece of legislation. I'm honored as an American who began my journey as an immigrant from Kosovo, and I'm a product of America's exceptionalism, to file this important piece of legislation. And I want to thank each one of you for your support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Zika, having closed on his bill, Adrian, will you please call the roll?
Chair Fine?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bell?
Yes.
Representative Lupus?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Hague?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Trunow?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes, since the chair verified that there
Let's
was
go.
No fiscal.
Let's go. Next one.
Willite?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
15 yes, sir.
Thank you. By a vote of 15 to 0, members, please show HB 5 will be reported favorably. All right, that brings us to the end of our business. Seeing no additional business, Vice Chair Bell moves we rise. See you next week. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.